able to reproduce. And they're beginning to fill many of the ecological niches in the northeastern United States abandoned by wolves. This moment of science comes from Indiana University. Today's program was prepared by Jeremy Shear, with help from Jeremy Heft at the Wolf Education and Research Center. There are hundreds more moments of science on our website at amomentofscience.org, where you can also view videos and sign up for podcasts. Once again, our web address, amomentofscience.org. I'm Don Glass.
Garrick McGee is taking over as Arkansas's offensive coordinator after Paul Petrino left to join the staff at Illinois. The Razorbacks announced McGee's promotion today. He had been the team's quarterbacks coach. Paul Petrino was announced as Illinois' offensive coordinator earlier today. The Bulls are off again today, recovering from Saturday's blowout loss to the Boston Celtics. Chicago will be back in action tomorrow, taking on the L.A. Lakers. The Blackhawks have a few days off after last night's 4-0 win over Tampa Bay. Chicago hosts the Blues on Wednesday. The Bears are out of the playoff picture after yesterday's loss to Green Bay. That makes it 3 straight postseason misses since the 2006 team's Super Bowl run. Optimism soared after the big trade with Denver for Jay Cutler, but the Bears plummeted after a 3-1 start. Indianapolis is setting marks left and right in the NFL. They beat Denver 28-16 yesterday to claim the NFL record for consecutive regular season wins with 22. Peyton Manning threw 4 touchdown passes as they clinched the AFC's top playoff seed and broke San Francisco's record for wins in a decade with 114. The NFL game tonight will be played in San Francisco. It's an NFC West contest, with the visiting Arizona Cardinals entering play with a 3-game lead over the 49ers. In the opening week of the season, the Niners beat the Cardinals 20-16. That's sports.
Support for the Environment Report comes from the Park Foundation and the Gaylord and Dorothy Donnelly Foundation. You can hear the report and subscribe to the daily podcast at environmentreport.org.
World leaders are in Copenhagen, Denmark, where the debate over what to do about climate change is sometimes loud. But in West Virginia coal country, the debate is louder. Lester Graham reports.
When the coal industry group, the West Virginia Coal Association, heard about plans for a rally to protest mountaintop removal coal mining, it issued an email. The association wanted supporters of the coal industry to hold a counter-protest to the, quote, liberal and viral wackos rally.
To bring up the best friend.
The coal mining supporters not only showed up, but they brought in some big trucks, horns blaring, to try to disrupt the protest speakers at the rally in front of the offices of West Virginia's Department of Environmental Protection. The coal industry's message is simple. Coal means jobs. Jobs mean paychecks. But the protesters against mountaintop removal coal mining say there are more important things. One of those speakers was Maria Gunno. She's a coal miner's daughter who's worked against the environmental damage of blowing off the tops of Appalachian mountains to get to the coal. The blasted debris has been dumped into valleys, damaging streams and water supplies.
I challenge you. You think it's hard to live without a paycheck? Try living with nothing to give your children to drink. Paycheck's not important when you don't have water for your children.
Maria Gunno has been there. She lives in a valley just downhill from a debris fill. She testified against the coal companies in a court case to stop them from dumping debris in streams. Let's just say she's not a popular figure among the pro-coal folks. Bo Webb lives in Coal River Valley. He's one of the organizers of the rally opposing mining Coal River Mountain. He is scheduled to protest the same day climate talks in Copenhagen started. He'd like to see the people where he lives get something from those negotiations in Europe.
I'm hoping that what comes out of Copenhagen for here would be a message that some of these miners could start understanding and stop being manipulated, allowing themselves to be manipulated by a coal industry that's got one concern, and that's profit.
At the counter rally, many of the coal mining supporters did not want to talk to news people. One guy who would talk is Gary Finley. He's from Ohio and sells equipment to the coal mining industry.
You know, this industry is regulated, heavily regulated now, So, you know, we're doing everything that's dictated by law in the mining of coal.
When asked about the future of coal, Finley hesitated.
Well, right now I'm uncertain. I hope it continues. You know, we've got a lot of coal in these mountains. I don't believe the people in this country realize that when they go into their homes and turn on the light switch, that the electric comes on. If we don't mine coal, it's done.
The protest and the counter-protests amounted to a lot of passionate speakers, a lot of booing, and a lot of truck horns. But what irritated the coal mining supporters more than anything else seemed to be the idea that outsiders were coming to West Virginia to tell them what to do. And the liberal outsider that aggravated them the most was environmentalist Robert Kennedy Jr. Kennedy calls fossil fuels like coal a deadly addiction that's wrecking the country, and says mountaintop removal coal mining is destroying communities.
And, you know, we need to figure out ways to power our country that don't compromise the aspirations of future generations, don't compromise their potential for prosperity, for wholesome, dignified communities.
In the end, nothing was really settled in West Virginia, just as nothing will be absolutely settled in Copenhagen. But at the local level and the international level, people are talking about fossil fuels differently. Some see a bright future in renewable, sustainable energy and preserved forested mountains, while others feel their lives and their livelihoods are threatened. For the Environment Report, I'm Lester Graham.
Coming up today on The World, the heat is on at the UN Climate Summit. The world's correspondent in Copenhagen monitors official talks and taps into the hallway chatter about emerging alliances between nations. A Copenhagen update, that story in the day's news, coming up this afternoon at 3 on The World from PRI. It's been said one man's trash is another man's treasure. That's true in the world of art. Some artists take stuff headed for the garbage dump and turn it into works of beauty. Illinois Public Radio's Rich Egger reports.
Jason Ackman is outside his home in Rushville. He's using a table saw to cut wood into shapes for a box frame he's piecing together. Ackman, who teaches art at Rushville High, says he rarely buys his materials. Most of the wood for his pieces is given to him or taken from the trash.
Some of the best material I've picked up so far has actually been from my neighbor. She disassembled some old cat, actually disassembled them and just was throwing them away during spring cleanup week. And I just happened to be riding back to school after lunch and noticed them. I was a little late for work after going back and getting them. But it was necessary. They were too good to pass up.
Ackman says his students sometimes laugh at him, but he points out he's saving money. He's also trying to be more environmentally aware. Ackman believes a lot of stuff goes to waste.
I would just say if anyone is interested in doing something like this, to just start taking things apart, seeing what you can use with what you have rather than going out and buying new.
Ackman is fitting together several different pieces of wood within the frame for the painting surface. His other tools include glue and a nail gun.
And honestly, I like the fact that it's not exactly cut perfectly. I mean, I still want things to line up correctly, but I don't mind a little bit of error, I guess you could say. I've always been a fan of texture and surfaces.
Ackman uses recycled paint. He says he's not picky about color. He likes the challenge of using whatever is available. Ackman is also one of the driving forces behind the Local Connection Artist Co-op in Rushville. The group holds occasional shows at the Phoenix Opera House. These are 3-hour, one-night-only events. Ackman's work was featured during one such show this fall. The exhibit included the piece we heard him working on earlier. It's part of a larger mixed-media image called Out of Reach. It includes 9 separate pieces grouped together to create one larger piece.
I like the separation, even though the painting continues, you know, through all of them. It all connects if you look at it from a distance. But when you get close, it looks like separate little paintings, but from a distance they combine. I just like the look of that and the feel of it.
Exhibiting with Ackman is Amber Bledsoe. She just started using recycled materials for her art, but is already creating some interesting work. One piece uses newspapers and old watch faces.
I go to a lot of antique shops that are kind of just like stuffed full of things. And I found the watches, several bags of them. They were broken, kind of rusted, and I just kind of dismantled them and used pieces of them.
Bledsoe's piece of art is called The Breakdown of Time. Kelly Quinn breaks dishes in the basement of her home in Macomb. This is part of her process for creating art out of old materials. Quinn puts together elaborate mosaics with a little help from her friends.
Most of the materials I have are materials that people leave on our porch. If they break dishes or get chips or decide they want a whole new dish set, then they just... Now people just leave it on the porch. They don't even say where it came from, you know. And I find these wonderful gifts pretty much every week.
Breaking the dishes results in different size fragments, which Quinn says creates a sense of movement and energy in her art. These fragments are glued to wood that's left over from home improvement projects. Quinn says the idea of reusing old materials for art is itself recycled.
You know, I'm very interested in the Dada movement, and several artists in that movement would do their art projects by sweeping the street in the morning. And they'd just go with a big dustpan and a bucket, and they'd sweep everything up, and then they'd go into their studio and say, here's my material for the day. What am I going to make? So that kind of a challenge is really fun.
Quinn also uses some glass that's cut to her specifications, along with semi-precious stones and a type of tile called smalti. But she guesses 85% of her materials are recycled.
I really enjoy the dichotomy of, you know, basically trash and semi-precious stones.
For many of us, recycling means separating paper, aluminum, and glass from the rest of our trash. But for some artists, recycling means finding a new life for old stuff and discovering the beauty in the discarded. They truly know what it means to say, one man's trash is another man's treasure.
The normal protocol is to just take a plate and...
Rich Ugger reporting.
It's 2:52. This is the Afternoon Magazine. The Lovely Bones was a very popular and very unusual novel told from the perspective of a dead teenage girl. Book lover and film critic Kenneth Turan has this review of the movie version.
The novel magically blended together mismatched elements: the warmly sentimental, the serial killer sinister, and the science fiction fantastical. In the film version, that unlikely combination comes back to haunt us. Director Peter Jackson and the writing team that tackled the Lord of the Rings trilogy took on the story of a 14-year-old girl who is savagely murdered. Jackson's best move was casting young Irish actress Saoirse Ronan, Oscar-nominated for Atonement, as the murdered Susie Salmon. Ronan brings naturalness, honesty, and radiance to the part of a teenager in the throes of her first romantic crush.
Oh! Crap!
Whoops.
It's okay.
Fine, I've got it.
Stupid books. I don't even read them. I do.
Susie, what are you doing on Saturday?
One of the best things about the film is its imaginative creation of Susie's afterlife, where she watches as her friends, her family, and her killer go on about their lives. A field of barley that changes into a rolling ocean. Huge versions of the ships in a bottle that were her father's hobby. They all create a world that is particular to Susie, and that makes it appeal to us all. The problem with the film is that it emphasizes the weirdest, creepiest elements of the book, including Susie's murderer. He's such a horrific individual that Stanley Tucci, the actor who plays him, says he came close to turning down the role. These shocking things are key plot points, but seeing them on the screen makes them play differently, disturbing the story's balance. If the novel was comforting, this film leaves a queasy taste in your mouth. And that might be the most shocking thing of all.
Kenneth Turan reviews movies for the Los Angeles Times and Morning Edition.
Earth and Sky. Rajendra Pachauri, who heads the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, or IPCC, says global warming is real and that the recent warming has been caused mainly by human activities. But Pachauri added,
I think we certainly need much more precise information through research in several parts of the world on the impacts of climate change.
Pachauri spoke with EarthSky's Jorge Salazar at the Copenhagen Climate Summit in December of 2009. He said that since 1990, IPCC experts have documented over 25,000 examples of observed changes to Earth's climate. These include early springs, snow melt, premature bud bursts, and loss of coral. To critics, he says,
we have assessed every piece of literature that has gone through the peer-reviewed process. And there's been no exclusion of anything at all. And I think the IPCC authors have been completely open and objective.
Still, he hopes that in the future, his organization will be able to make even more specific projections about climate change in this century.
I think those need to be downscaled, and we need to project those impacts in a way that we get much more reliable information on what's going to happen in several parts of the world. There are gaps which I hope will get filled up partly.
EarthSky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from Owens Funeral Home, located at the corner of Elman University in the historic Trivette Mansion across from Westside Park in downtown Champaign. Owens Funeral Home, owned and operated by the Owens family since 1925, invites you to join them in supporting public radio.
Let's take a look at the weather forecast for Illinois and Indiana. It was prepared by Mike Sola. This afternoon's forecast in northwestern Illinois, cloudy with some fog and scattered flurries or a few snow showers. Elsewhere in the north, cloudy with scattered areas of drizzle and patchy fog. In central and southern sections this afternoon, mostly cloudy with scattered sprinkles. Highs ranging from 32 in far northwestern Illinois to around 60 in southeastern Indiana. Tonight, cloudy with patchy drizzle in Indiana and southern Illinois during the evening hours. Lows tonight ranging from 5 in far northwestern Illinois to 27 in far southeastern Indiana. Tomorrow in western Illinois, mostly sunny, elsewhere cloudy early, then becoming mostly sunny from west to east. Highs ranging from 8 in far northwestern Illinois to 38 in far southeastern Indiana. In Champaign-Urbana this afternoon, mostly cloudy and breezy with a chance of patchy drizzle. We've hit the high for the day today, near 50. The temperature is slowly starting to fall now. It's 47 degrees in Urbana. The wind this afternoon shifting to westerly, then northwesterly at 12 to 20 miles per hour. Tonight, cloudy and colder, the low 22. The wind from the northwest at 10 to 20 miles per hour. The outlook for tomorrow, mostly cloudy early, then becoming mostly sunny. The high only around 30. The wind tomorrow from the northwest at 10 to 20 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, clear skies, the low 14. Wednesday, sunny, the high 35. Wednesday night, partly cloudy.